Hi, this is Rachel Cohen welcoming all my listeners to a fabulous show. I have two friends joining me. Actually, I have three friends and then the guest speaker, which is Bill Follis. And let me tell you, his books have me sitting on the edge of my seat in packed, filled conference tables that you cannot believe. I listen to him all the time on the internet, and I was honored to email him, and he was willing to sit down and speak with me, and then I have friends joining us. And I'm not going to interrupt him when he speaks, because I know that my listeners are interested in what he has to say, and particularly in the Psalm 83 war. So please welcome Bill to our table.
It's great to be with you, Rachel.
And also I have JR joining us and Diane, who are interested as well in Bill's work and what he foresees coming in the near future to our country here in America, which ties in to Israel, which is the sister country to America.
I'll just say, Bill, I woke up a few nights ago about 3 in the morning, and I just knew I wasn't going back to sleep. And so I knew it was time to sit down with the Word, and the Lord just, I don't exactly remember how, but he brought me to Psalm 83. And I actually looked up the Confederacy, your little chart, and because I had read Psalm 83 several times, and it makes sense what you say about it being a precursor to Gog and Magog in Ezekiel 38 and 39, because, you know, I had studied, I actually graduated from Multnomah University in Portland, Oregon, and I've been to seminary, and the Lord actually got me back to him through Bible prophecy and through the book of Revelation. But anyway, so I had been studying Ezekiel 38 and 39, but I always felt there had to be something. It was too big. It was too grand. It was too huge. And it seemed like something had to happen before that. So I looked up the Psalm 83. I was studying it. And I looked at your chart with the modern and the ancient. And just quick summary, and then I'll be quiet. But the northern Iraq, Syria, Lebanon, Sinai, Egypt, Hezbollah, Hamas, they're all going to come against Israel in the Psalm 83 war. Is that accurate?
Yes, and you might even have Saudi Arabia in there, and you certainly have the Palestinians in there. They're actually listed first by called the Tents of Edom. And the Palestinians have ethnical representation of the Edomites within their population. Not all Palestinians are Edomites. You have Ammonites and Moabites and Megabites and Gigabites and things like that as well. But so you've got about 10 populations that Asaph lists. He's the psalmist. He writes about 3,000 years ago. He's also a prophet. We're told in 2 Chronicles 29:30 that he's a seer, a beholder of vision. And he wrote 12 psalms, and Psalm 83 is probably the most prophetic. But your assessment is right. It does seem like, why would, I want to say one more thing first. When you talk about Edom, the tents of Edom, he lists them in a habitation condition. They're listed first among all the population in a habitation condition. And whenever you have a population listed first in the Bible, that's usually pretty significant. Like in Gog and Magog, for instance, that's listed first. Russia is sort of the spearhead of that Ezekiel 38 invasion. So the plight of the Palestinians when they're in a tent-like condition, or the Edomites when they're in a tent-like condition, is what we're alerted to watch for the timing. And that became a reality after 1948 when the Palestinian refugees became refugees. They were Arabs of Palestine at the time, and they became Palestinian refugees. When you talk about Ezekiel 38 and 39 being this momentous marquee event, it just seems like something has to happen to fit.
Yeah.
You're right. It is the marquee event that God is going to uphold his holy name through the midst of his people Israel, that the nation shall know he's the Lord. His name will not be profaned anymore, it says at that point. But you're right. If you just look at it on surface value, you know, that includes like Russia and Turkey and Iran and Libya, and it's 9 members altogether that Ezekiel lists, which, by the way, none of the Psalm 83 countries are listed by Ezekiel, even though he's very familiar with those Edomites and Ammonites and Moabites. He writes about all the Psalm 83 countries about 89 times in his 48 chapters, but he does not include one of them in Ezekiel 38 and 39. But it's, if you look at it, like again, I say at the surface, it's like, well, that'd be like if America said they were having problems with New Jersey, let's say, because New Jersey is about the size of Israel, and said, let's go get Canada and all the other states in America and Mexico, and let's go take out New Jersey.
Mm-hmm.
It just seems, you know, like, why does Russia need all these big friends?
Right.
And, you know, that kind of thing. So, you're right. Something has to happen.
Yeah.
The Ezekiel invaders have to go through the lands of the Psalm 83 countries to even get into Israel. Yeah. Why are they not listed by Ezekiel?
Yeah.
Russia has to be dwelling, Israel has to be dwelling securely.
Yeah.
In order for Russia to invade. Without walls, bars, nor gates in the midst of the land, they have to be very, very prosperous, because Russia is going to be enticed to come after that prosperity. And Israel, of course, is very prosperous. It's amazing the Lord is blessing Israel amidst all these global economic collapses going all around.
Yeah.
It's interesting that Israel is prospering. But that Israel described in Ezekiel 38, verses 8 through 13, to me doesn't exist just yet. They can't dwell securely because they're surrounded by their enemies in Psalm 83. After they deal with Psalm 83, that's a whole other story.
Yeah. Well, I was talking to a friend of mine named Keith, and I was talking to him about the blood moons. And Keith is extremely perceptive, and he always asks the right questions. And he said, so what, basically? So what if we have this tetrad, you know, of the blood moons on Passover and Sukkot in 2014 and 2015? What does that mean? And I said, well, a lot of theologians, prophecy teachers, believe that it could possibly be the Psalm 83 war that Bill Salas is talking about. And the interesting thing, one of the points that you make that I think is very interesting, and I'm not saying you're tying it to the blood moons, but I do think it's interesting that you say once they win the Psalm 83 war, they have so much more territory. And that also matches 67 and 48, which also you have the tetrad of blood moons during those times as well.
Mm-hmm. Well, there is a possible connection with the coming blood moons if they're significant. The verdict's not out on that yet. You know, I mean, there's some naysayers are going to start to come out, and they already are.
They already are.
On the theory of the blood moons. And
yeah.
I mean, I can go through why they may not be, but that's, you know, that's a whole other radio program.
Sure.
I actually believe they deserve a very honorable mention, and I think they could be significant.
Mm-hmm.
And I think two of the main proposers of the blood moons being significant are John Agee and Mark Diltz, and I've been on TBN Praise the Lord shows with both of those guys when their books first came out. And I think they present persuasive arguments to the case that the blood moon tetrads are significant.
Mm-hmm.
Now, if they are, the main ones they talk about go back to the last three, and this will be the fourth coming up on Passover and Tabernacles of 2014 and 2015. There won't be any more for the rest of the century. I personally checked out NASA's Eclipse website to do my homework to make sure that that's the case. There'll be more blood moons, lunar eclipses, but not on the feast days.
Right.
Throughout the rest of the century. So if these are significant, they could be very much telling us something. And the way I look at these, I think Mark Bills does a good job. He connects it to Genesis 1:14. Says the Lord created the lights and the firmaments to divide the day from the night, and you know, seasons and things, but also for signs and seasons. And I would interpret that, the Hebrew words moeth and oed, as heavenly banners displayed at appropriate times. I think it's God's Amber Alert system, really, is what
it
is for.
Yeah, that's good.
That was excellent.
So when you look at these blood moon scenarios, you go back to what was happening. What were the Jews doing on Passover of 1493 and Tabernacles of 1493, 1494, and also the Passover and Tabernacles? That's what makes them probably significant and worth paying attention to, is that they're happening on Passover and Tabernacles,
mm-hmm.
in all these instances. And, you know, the Edict of Expulsion had gone out in Spain in 1492, and the Jews were under severe persecution. John Hagee points out in this book, it was almost like a Nazi scenario, Holocaust.
Yeah.
And people don't understand how really severe it was.
Yeah.
And Christopher Columbus, who may very well have been a Jew, he himself said, I believe, that he is from the line of David. And, but And we believe that maybe the Niña Pinta and the Santa Maria ships were filled with affluent Jews that had convinced Queen Isabella and King Ferdinand that they should be able to flee. And so they fled, and it's not germane whether they were Jews or not. I mean, that doesn't matter. The fact is that these boats went out, they were headed toward the West Indies and somehow found America, right? Mm-hmm. So what happened was you had at that time, and this is a pattern, this is where I'm going with this, and this will take a couple minutes, so I hope we have that time on your show.
Of course.
Okay. What you had at that time was you had this unjustified Gentile persecution of the Jewish people. And then they were divinely preserved through that by the Lord. And then ultimately they were found a safe place to be because America gets founded. And America, one of the main goals God established America was to be a safe haven for the Jewish people. America was also founded to be a beacon of Christianity to the nations of the world and to be instrumental in the rebirth of the nation of Israel. We have 5 million Jews roughly in America, recently surpassed by Israel with about 6 million. The nearest other country would be France with about 483,500. So that testifies to the fact that America was used by the Lord to be a safe haven for the Jewish people.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
So what happens on the Passover of 1493? The Jews required to observe their feast day of Passover. They can thank their God joyfully that they can observe Passover, that they were not destroyed, and that they have a safe place now that they can start to go. And throughout time, the Jews, of course, started coming over here. So that's interesting to me. But when you jump it up about another 400 plus years into 1949 and 1950, you had these other Blood Moon Tetrads on Passover and Tabernacles.
Yeah.
And the year prior, in 1948, was the Arab-Israeli War of Independence. And again, what do you have? You have unjustified Gentile persecution coming against the Jews who are just simply wanting to get stored into their homeland. They happen to be the nations involved in Psalm 83 that come against them.
Mm-hmm.
And there's divine preservation through that persecution as all of a sudden these refugees, you know, the Haganah, and they start to fight for their lives, and they miraculously win. And out from there, of course, the Israeli Defense Forces ultimately got formed. And so what happens? They get their land. They get Israel. They get their homeland. So what are they doing on Passover of 1949 and 1950 and Tabernacles? The same thing. They're thanking their God that he preserved them through this unjustified Gentile persecution and that they had now a homeland in which they could observe the feasts on. And then you jump it up to 1967 and 1968, those tetrads. And in June, the Six-Day War of June of 1967, you had, again, unjustified Gentile persecution from three primary of the Psalm 83 nations, Egypt, Jordan, and Syria, coming against Israel, and Israel's defense forces win. They're divinely empowered and preserved through that. And so what happens? They expand territorially. They gain more land. They almost triple their size by getting the Gaza, the West Bank, the Sinai, the Golan, East Jerusalem. And so what can they be doing on those holidays? They can be thanking their Lord, their God Jehovah, that they were not, the genocide was not committed, and that they have a more land now to observe the feast days and that sort of thing. So when I look at the ones coming, in light of Psalm 83, there's all kinds of prophecies that I point out in my book, Psalm 83, The Missing Prophecy Revealed, how Israel becomes the next Middle East superpower. There's going to be a greater Israel coming. There's prophecies that talk about Israel expanding into Jordan, into certainly Judea and Samaria, and even southern Lebanon. Egypt, it says in Isaiah 19:18, five cities in the land of Egypt will speak the language of Canaan, which is Hebrew. One of those cities will be called the City of Destruction. So I look at the possibility that there is a potential connection, that there'll be a Psalm 83, a final confrontation coming against the Jews, unjustified Gentile persecution against the Jews. The Israeli Defense Forces will win because they exist in fulfillment of Bible prophecy, primarily to defend the nation in Psalm 83. They're not instrumental in Ezekiel 38, and they're certainly not fighting in Armageddon. They're fleeing at that point. I look at the possibility that this is going to be another major situation in Israel, and Israel will survive, and they'll get more land.
Yeah.
And then what will they be doing on those holidays? Same thing, thanking their God, that they survived and they can observe the holidays and in more land. And they have a precedent of taking land in wars. You've seen it in 1967. Joshua did it 3,300 years ago.
Right.
He won wars, took land. King David and King Solomon did it.
How about years ago. David and Goliath? Ancient example.
Yeah, yeah. So, I mean, I think that there's valid concerns that, you know, are these blood moons really significant? But at the same token, if they are significant, as we sit here with a timestamp on this program, and just coming at the end of March, 2014. We're talking about when Americans are sealing their tax return envelopes for the IRS.
Yes.
That these blood moons are going to happen on April 15th of Passover.
Yeah, exactly. And also one of the things the Lord led me to when I was up studying in Psalm 83 and looking at your chart. And by the way, I think it's really important that the listeners look at your chart, because if they just read Psalm 83, they'll be like, so what? I mean, they don't get it. They don't get, like, for example, that Hagar is the matriarch of Egypt. So Hagar, the Hagarines, means Egypt, et cetera, et cetera. They need to see your chart to equivocate it to modern day, you know, politics, geopolitics.
I agree with that. I think that with your chart, it actually puts the puzzle together. There is a puzzle there, and you have all the pieces, but if they're out of order, it doesn't make sense. But when you have charted it out, it makes perfect sense. The Rubik's Cube has all the sides lined up, and that's what I suggest as well. I'm glad you said that.
You know, inside of the book, the Psalm 83 book, we have the chart you're referring to, which shows the modern-day equivalents of the populations Asaph listed 3,000 years ago. We also have some maps, you know, that make the illustrations pretty clear to the reader. And, you know, when Asaph wrote, there were no Palestinians or Jordanians and things like that. So it's important to, you know, I sometimes I'll say, if I'm going to take the liberties, if Asaph was with us today, I'm telling you who I think he'd be telling us us about in this prophecy. You know, there's an ancient hatred that we're told about in a couple places in the Bible that goes way back. Psalm 83 talks about your enemies make a tumult, and those who hate you have lifted up their head. That's verse 2, Psalm 83, verse 2. And you look back at those that hate God and come against the Jews because of the covenant of people from God, from Abraham, the chosen people. You look back at the history of a hatred that developed at the time of Abraham, and I think that's one of the reasons Asaph listed Hagar and Ishmael and the Edomites and the Ammonites and the Moabites. Now, these all had familial relationships with Abraham. Hagar was the mother of Ishmael. You know, she was the concubine that, you know, mothered Ishmael. Abraham was the father of Ishmael. Ishmael became the father of the Arabs. We think the nation that came out of him might be Saudi Arabia, you know. Esau fathered the Edomites. Esau was Abraham's grandson. The Ammonites and the Moabites were the cousins of the Hebrews, right?
Mm-hmm.
The Amalekites are listed in there. That was Esau's great-grandson, I believe, something like that. So what happened throughout time, because they didn't sit around and play Sony PlayStation and stuff like that, is they sat around in the campfire, and I hate to say it, but talked about what they got cheated out of. You know, that the covenant went through Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob, not through Ishmael, not through Esau. You know, and so, you know, I think that throughout time that was a problem that the Jews always faced with. And think about this, you know, from the Jewish perspective, the Hebrews back then. And by the way, I want to dovetail into this too. So you have the enemies and those who hate you. Your enemies make a tumult and those who hate you in Psalm 83 verse 2. So the other four populations of Assyria and Gabal, which would be in Lebanon, inhabitants of Tyre, which would be in Lebanon, possibly the Hezbollah, and Philistia, which is where the Hamas are. Now they found it more favorable to embrace this hatred that was incubating and spawning into the Middle East, because it served their purposes to possess the land and things like that as well, rather than have the Hebrews come along and say, look, by the way, we're the chosen people, and if you bless us, you'll be blessed, but if you curse us, you'll be cursed. Nice. By the way, you're on our land, because God gave us all this land in Genesis 15, 18. You know, so that was not a message that resonated well with the peoples, indigenous peoples of the region. So this hatred went through time and never went away. Yeah. Never went away throughout the diaspora with the Jews. And so Satan comes along in the 7th century and takes all that hatred, realizing from Bible prophecy, someday the Jews are going to come back in the land.
Yeah.
And he puts this hatred into a religion.
Yeah.
So that when Jews come into the land, they feel justified to try to stop Israel through their religious reasons. The Hebrew words are olam iba for this ancient hatred. They show up in Ezekiel 35:5 and Ezekiel 25:15. And what they mean when you break them down is it's a hatred stemming back long ago, originating long ago, perpetuated throughout time, that manifests into hostility with no apparent end in sight. And the bottom line is it's cancerous. Mm-hmm. It has to be stopped.
Yeah.
And land for peace deals are not the method that the Bible prescribes for it to be stopped.
Yeah, you know, I was reading, and when I was up that night, I also was led to Zechariah chapter 1, and Zechariah is asking, I think, the angel of the Lord or something about, you know, like, what are you doing or why are you here or whatever, and he said, I've come to measure, I brought my measuring rod, and I brought to measure the length and breadth of the land. And if you look at Genesis and where God says to Abraham, you know, walk, you know, the length and breadth or whatever, if you look at how the Bible describes what belongs to Israel, it's huge. I mean, it's a lot more than what they have now. So what you're saying, sort of, what the Lord is saying through Psalm 83, sort of has to happen, doesn't it? I mean, they have to gain more land.
Well, yeah, someday they're going to get all that land, and the land mass that you're talking about is from the river of Egypt, probably the Nile, to the river Euphrates, which courses through modern-day Iraq and Syria. And, you know, God is going to give them all that land. And I think when the Messiah returns for his thousand-year kingdom, we're told it will be 1,000 years in Revelation 20, verse 4, they'll get it all. But they've been getting it incrementally since they became a nation. And contrary to what the international community or the Arabs care, you know, say.
Yeah.
You know, so there's a green line that was drawn, an armistice line in 1949. There's a blue line that was drawn, you know, with the little safety zone, neutral zone between Lebanon and Israel. You know, everybody's been drawing all kinds of red lines this past year. Iran's nuclear program with Benjamin Netanyahu. Obama had a red line with Syria's chemical weapons. Syria had a red line if Israel struck it again. And just take all those lines, dear listeners, and just throw them out the window, because the only line that matters are the borders that God establishes.
Amen.
Because while the world is trying to contract Israel, God is going to enlarge it.
Yeah.
Because God's plan is to bring the Jews back into the land of Israel. And guess what? They're still coming, folks.
Yeah.
And you're not going to stop that. You're not going to stop God's plan.
Yeah.
And so it doesn't matter how hard the international community tries to constrict.
Right.
God is going to enlarge.
Yeah.
Because those people have to come in. And those settlements are going to keep going.
Yeah.
Because, you know, they've got to have places to go. You know, God, this isn't about what anybody says except God.
Exactly.
It's going to happen, and it's going to keep coming. But they're pushing so hard, and the more you see it push now, the closer we're going to be to the explosion. It's going to be a war, and diplomacy is going to fail.
Yeah.
And that's what the Bible says.
God is not a man that he should lie, and if he told Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob, you know, I'm going to keep my covenant with you, then he's
going
to keep it.
Well, look what's going on. I mean, the Arabs didn't win in 1948. They got a lot. Israel got land. They didn't win in 1967. Israel got more land. And they're not going to win in Psalm 83, and Israel's going to get more land. Jeremiah 49, verses 1 through 6, talks about there's an alarm of war in Rabbah of the Ammonites. That's roughly where the capital of Jordan is, in Ammon. And it says it'll be a desolate mound. It almost sounds like what happens to Syria in Isaiah 17:1. Damascus will someday cease to be a city. It'll be a ruinous heap, reduced to rubble. And, you know, I mean, that really, the distance is only, I don't know, about 100 miles or something between Ammon, Jordan, and Damascus. It's not very far.
Yeah.
And it says that Ammon's going to be a desolate mound. And then it says, and Israel will take its possession. So Israel's going to be involved in a war, and they're going to expand territorially into Jordan. Okay? So, you know, that's going to be an amazing situation. Why would Israel expand into Jordan, into Ammon area? Because they're not there right now.
Yeah.
Well, it would have to be because of their victory. It won't be some other victory, and it won't be some diplomatic solution, because it says there's an alarm of war, not an alarm of peace treaty or something, right?
Mm-hmm.
So it's coming.
Yeah.
And it's coming, and I'm just trying to sound the alarm that it's coming. And it's a game-changing war. It's not just another regional conflict. It will affect everybody, and it'll affect world economies. And, you know, we don't have every detail about what's going to happen. as far as America and all these other places. But we have to go on the bottom line, is that God will bless those that bless Israel and everything, and he'll curse those who curse them. And I'm very concerned for America, because right now we are forcing Israel to sit at a table with people that don't even recognize the Jewish state as Israel as the Jewish state. And they don't want to recognize it, because the moment they recognize it, and it's not just the Palestinians, it's the whole Arab League, that means that the right of return issue for the refugees is resolved. They can't come into Israel. They have to be assimilated into the Arab states, or they have to be assimilated into a Palestine if one ever comes into fruition, but they will not come into Israel. And so this is a really big deal, and these are not small issues. And I think the moment that the Palestinians realize that the lie has been perpetuated for over 65 years by their Arab cohorts, as well as their own people, that there is no right of return coming, folks, that you have no right to that land. And then that's when they're going to flip out. And that's when they try to lay siege on Jerusalem. It says in Zechariah 12, 2 and 3, that 12, 2, it says, I will make Jerusalem a cup of trembling.
Yeah.
A cup of drunkenness and some, and to all the surrounding peoples.
Right.
When they lay siege on Jerusalem.
Yeah.
Okay. He goes on in Zechariah 12, verse 5 and 6, and talks about, and at that time I will make the captains of Judah, read that as the Israeli Defense Forces, the governors of Judah, a fire pan, and like a fiery torch with the sheaves, and they will devour all the surrounding peoples on the right hand and on the left hand. I mean, it's very specific. It's not way in the innermost parts of the north and way out in the isles in the southlands. And no, it's the surrounding peoples just around Israel. It's the Psalm 83 people. And they're going to come after Israel, and they're going to try to take Jerusalem, third holiest city in Islam, although it's not mentioned once in the Quran.
Yeah.
And they think they have some kind of claim to Jerusalem.
Yeah.
It's mentioned over 1,000 times in the Bible by 70 different names. And the fact of the matter is, someone needs to let these Arabs understand that Islam has no claims on Jerusalem.
I think I remember just recently hearing that Netanyahu's son was like a Bible scholar, and he discovered what you just said, you know, that Jerusalem's not really mentioned in the Quran, but it's mentioned a lot in the Bible.
Yeah, it's not mentioned in the Quran.
Hmm.
It's just amazing, though, that the small piece of land is fought so vehemently over. I mean, right now it is so small, and it's in every newspaper, in every town, there is a mention of something going on in that country.
Mm-hmm.
And as we're listening to all the news with brother against brother, the Sunnis against the Shiites, everybody is fighting, and the only democracy is sitting over there peaceful, and they're always trying to maintain peace. Well, everyone, they're surrounded by 25 Arab countries, huge. And this one postage stamp, nap-sized piece of real estate is what everybody is fighting over.
Mm-hmm. Well, you notice that they've been trying for over 6 decades now to get some of that land from Israel.
Mm-hmm.
You know, Russia just recently came over and took about 5 times that amount of land without firing a shot. You know, God's not going to give them that land. It's just not going to happen.
Yeah.
This is like getting a college education from you. It really is, though, for listeners out there that have grappled with the idea. They know that there is prophecy, but churches aren't really teaching it. That's what the introduction was at this conference, is that a lot of the churches are not, they've let go of the prophecy, which the whole books, I mean, it used to be called seers. The prophecy parts of the churches have been abandoned. And we better get ready. We have the book. We have the beginning and we have the end. We better know what the meat is in the middle. And I think you bring that to the table so crystal clear. It's like looking through a sheet of glass. But people have to be willing to open their eyes to read what you put. And read the way that you lay it out, it is the puzzle. And I love how you put it together.
Thanks a lot, Rachel.
I mean, God is great. When is everything going to happen? Because I don't want to buy any green bananas.
right. Yeah, the old good old rapture joke. I'm so pre-trib, I don't even buy post-toasties. And I am pre-trib, and I think that we have reasons to believe that Jesus is going to come really, really soon.
Yeah.